This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, August 2nd. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. The pandemic gave many people the opportunity to work from anywhere, and many moved to places they'd always dreamed of. For job hunters in the tech industry, it meant they didn't need to be living in Silicon Valley to get the Bay Area's salaries and benefits. But what does it mean for tech companies in small markets outside the Bay Area? On today's show, reporter Katie Binley, who covers Silicon Valley work and culture for The Wall Street Journal, joins us to discuss what those firms are doing to stay competitive. That's after these headlines. Amazon has been hit with a record $887 million fine from the EU for violations related to its advertising business. It's the largest fine ever under the European Union's data protection law. Amazon disclosed the fine in a securities filing last Friday. It was issued 2 weeks ago by Luxembourg's privacy regulator and was accompanied by an order to revise certain business practices, which Amazon didn't specify. Amazon said the regulator's decision was without merit and that it would appeal in court. Luxembourg's privacy regulator, the CNPD, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The CNPD is the lead privacy watchdog for Amazon in the EU because the firm's European headquarters are located in Luxembourg. Samsung Electronics brought in the equivalent of $19.7 billion in semiconductor revenue last quarter, surpassing competitor Intel to become the world's largest chipmaker by revenue. The South Korean tech company's rise to number one in revenue reflects the huge demand in memory chips, which are Samsung's specialty. Most of Intel's income comes from much more expensive central processing units. But Intel is embarking on a costly strategy to get into the contract manufacturing of super-powered, cutting-edge chips, a market that is currently dominated by Samsung and Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing. Global semiconductor revenue is expected to grow at 12.5% this year, to $522 billion, according to market research from International Data Corp. And a Tesla battery pack caught fire at one of Australia's largest utility-scale electricity storage projects on Friday. Flames engulfed a lithium-ion battery weighing 13 metric tons, which was housed in a shipping container at a site near Melbourne. Fire crews were able to prevent the fire from spreading across the site. The French renewable energy company Neoen, which runs the site, said the fire broke out during initial testing and that no one was injured. Authorities didn't identify the cause of the blaze. All right, coming up, tech workers may have moved away from Silicon Valley, but big tech still has an edge when it comes to hiring top talent. We'll get into the details after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
The pandemic spurred a change in lifestyle for many Americans. For some tech workers, embracing the work-from-anywhere opportunity meant moving away from crowded and expensive regions like the Bay Area and New York to more open places with lower costs of living. But just because so many tech workers left Silicon Valley doesn't mean the impact of big tech on the workforce is going away. The salary and benefit expectations employees had from working at big companies on the coasts are impacting smaller firms that used to be able to attract talent with the opportunity for a more laid-back lifestyle. So, how are those businesses coping, and what does it mean for the long-term tech markets in smaller cities? Joining us to discuss is our tech reporter, Katie Binley. Hey, Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the big picture. Most tech firms started remote working more than a year ago. Where do these companies stand on reopening their offices?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of, I think, a little bit up in the air very recently. Initially, there were these plans to get people back in, you know, in like September, fallish time. We did have a couple earlier than that. Salesforce had started letting people come back in May, and Twitter started having people come back into their San Francisco and New York offices just a couple of weeks ago. And then obviously with, you know, cases on the rise again, some of the companies have been rethinking some of these things. So Google, for example, announced that people would now be coming back in mid-October, it looks like, and that also they need to be vaccinated. And Facebook has also said that their employees will need to be vaccinated as well. So I think it's kind of a moving target, and to, you know, TBD if we'll see more more companies pushing it back or kind of rethinking when people should come back in.
So how big has the exodus from Silicon Valley been?
This is a question that's been speculated on for, you know, probably almost a year now, I would say. You know, for tech workers specifically, you know, one of the best ways to figure out how many left is just to get information specifically from tech companies. So in this case, we had 9 tech companies share their relocation data with us. And on average, it turns out about 9% of the employees that they considered as part of, you know, their Bay Area staff made permanent moves outside the region during the pandemic. The companies that share their data included Twitter, Slack, Dropbox, and some other pretty well-known names. And pre-pandemic, they had a total of more than 9,000 workers in the Bay Area. So then you figure, you know, of those that shared, it was on average 9% left. So it's not a monstrous number, but it's not insignificant, I would say.
So these companies aren't just being flexible with where their current workers are located. They're also being more flexible with where they hire. How is that affecting the companies in smaller cities?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. Several of the companies that I talked to, you know, who have these large concentrations of people in San Francisco and have their headquarters there, have really used remote work as an opportunity to find more diverse talent in locations kind of all over the country. So they've started recruiting all over and looking in cities that they really hadn't previously done so. But then that has this ripple effect on the startups located in those cities who, you know, previously would not typically have had to compete for a new hire with a company in San Francisco or New York or Seattle. So you're seeing it on two fronts, basically. So for new hires, they're now finding that in some cases, those candidates are, you know, interviewing for remote roles with companies based in San Francisco, Seattle, and New York. And then also they're finding that their existing employees are getting hit up by some of these coastal companies, and they're getting offered higher salaries. And so then, you know, the local companies in these smaller cities have to figure out, how do we hang on to our current employees? And this is something that they hadn't necessarily seen coming, obviously, before the pandemic. Here is Lee Mayer. She's the CEO of an online interior design startup called Havenly.
Once we started to see some of our employees, and then also many of the people we were making offers to, comparing our offers to, say, a tech company in the Bay Area, we started to realize that we might need to start to become more competitive, because clearly the job market for top candidates was becoming more national.
What kind of salary increases are we talking about here?
So, I mean, it can be significant. Lee said on average when two of her executives were getting recruited that they were being offered, I think, on average about 20% higher salaries than what they were receiving from Havenly. And then this other company that I spoke with based in Boise called Clearwater, they said that for the people who had taken remote jobs but planning to stay in Boise, that those people, I think on average, the salary increases were about 25% for those that reported how much they were going to be making in their new roles.
Right. So it doesn't just seem like it's about hiring new employees and facing those increases in salaries. It's also about dealing with employees that are being poached for higher salaries.
Yeah, basically, people are kind of trying to be, I guess, on defense in terms of preventing attrition. And basically, for now, the effect is just upward pressure on wages. Here's what Verl Allen, the CEO of Clarivine, which is based outside of Salt Lake City, had to say about what they're doing.
We went through kind of the entire team, top to bottom, looking at compensation, looking at kind of how locked in we felt they were. But we've had to really more frequently revisit compensation and have those discussions as a team.
And here's what Lee Mayer had to say about how they just didn't see this coming.
The hard part a little bit is we're capitalized for Denver. So all of our plans sort of presumed this idea that our talent and our most of our employees would live in a lower cost of living market like Denver. And so paying a little bit more, you know, in order to compete nationally is obviously a bit of a strain on our finances. But the reality is talent is what makes our company run.
So paying more right now is something a lot of firms are having to deal with. What about going forward? Do they expect the national competition for talent is going to keep salaries high in the long term?
It's a good question. I did speak with some researchers who talked about, you know, we're seeing upward pressure on wages right now, but longer term, we might ultimately end up seeing downward pressure on wages, because if companies can go, you know, hire people in cities where salaries are lower, then they might also, you know, go back to people based in more expensive cities and say, I'm not willing to pay you as much anymore because I can find these people who are willing to take, you know, take a lower salary. So there was speculation that maybe longer term we'll see downward pressure on wages. But also there's, you know, there's bigger implications of this, which are kind of like what happens to the talent that has relocated to these areas longer term? I mean, do they sort of stay happily ever after in their remote roles with these companies that are based hundreds of miles away? Or do they start to, as Steve Case put it, you know, miss being in the room where things happen? So the hope for people living in these smaller communities who kind of care about the tech ecosystem there is that eventually these people will become part of the local talent stream. So either they will get, you know, tired of these remote roles and they'll feel disconnected and ultimately want to, you know, contribute to a company that's actually based in the city that they live in. Or, you know, in some cases, I think that the hope is that they will identify needs and opportunities in their new hometowns and possibly end up starting companies of their own there.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. That's our reporter, Katie Binley. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. You can always find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.